Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast. As truthful as resources permit, my name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the EU referendum in 2016.
And my name is Jazza and I went through the deepest existential crisis of, I think, my adult life yesterday, which was the Saturday, Super Saturday, as it was being called by an awful lot of the media, because Parliament sat for the first time on a Saturday in 30... In some years. In many years. I suddenly came to the realisation that this might all be over, that it could just end and we would leave the European Union, because it hasn't been real for the last, like, 2 years. And I was intensely sad. And then there was the relief of what actually ended up transpiring. But in case that wasn't clear, dear listener, I voted to remain. We meet sometimes weekly, but every now and again to talk about politics, social issues and current events. We are with guests this
week. Hello.
Would you like to introduce yourself, Richard?
I am Richard. I am the straggler. And I also voted Leave. So, Jim, you're in good company today. Oh, wow. This is fine.
It's very rare for us to be 2-on-1 in my favour.
But so...
Wow.
Yeah. We are in London, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, and that's also a point, because I myself am from the north of England. My constituency voted overwhelmingly to leave the European Union, and now I am in a place that didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing because, you know, spending a life in Scotland, who also didn't vote to do that, mm-hmm. and now coming down here, you get a lot of opinions and points of view and mixtures of the two, uninformed and fully informed, and it's really interesting to sort of get that mixed picture. So I'm just
give us a snapshot. How were you feeling? Because we're going to talk about the events of Parliament over the weekend, but what was the experience like for you? You said you were watching it on telly.
I'll tell it. Yeah. Aye, I know. Proper. Hey, lads in Preston. Aye.
Yeah.
Proper lads. Aye. Also, shout out to our current deputy speaker. He's an absolute ledge. I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified because, and again, and not just because, you know, sort of this whole saga could possibly come to an end. And, you know, like I said, I voted Leave. So, and I've had a lot of experience sort of chatting to Remainers and what have you. So I wasn't that concerned either way or which way it went. I was more concerned just for the sheer fallout that could have happened from that particular day. And there was, and it came, I mean, frighteningly close.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest fear was that if they voted in the Letwin Act, the Letwin Bill, they would be sort of downtrodden by Bojo, and that he would just stomp all over and say, oh no, no, this, my opinion, you lawmakers, me Bojo, you law, I trample over you.
Mm-hmm.
And that came so nearly true.
Yeah. Whereas actually now we're at the point where he has begrudgingly asked for an extension because it is the law.
I love that he didn't sign.
But he didn't sign the letter, and then he sent two other letters saying that he didn't think that the first letter that he sent was a very good idea.
I mean, we've all been there, haven't we? We write the first email.
Yeah.
Like, oh Jesus!
Yeah.
Like, if only I could do that at the office, that would be amazing. No. This is what I meant when I called you an absolute slag, boss.
So we are obviously going to be talking about Boris Johnson's New Deal. And what happened over the weekend in Parliament, including the march, perhaps, a little bit of what happened outside of Parliament as well. Speaking of Parliament, our second topic will be the election of the new Speaker. As Vox, was it Vox who said quite beautifully that the guy who says order a lot in the British Parliament is stepping down from his job,
is
being replaced.
Did say that.
Brilliant headline, because that's the only way that the American
the
audience is
going to
be.
Go and watch the Stephen Colbert skits that include sort of monologues about him.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Absolutely. Like, they love him. Mm. They absolutely adore him. It's Stephen Colbert. Like, when Boris Johnson's brother stood up, he was like, oh, yes, they adore me. In fact, that man over there is giving me a standing... Oh. no. But it, like, they love the whole pomp and circumstance.
Yeah. I mean, there's stories of Tony Blair walking down the street in like New York and Americans being like, oh, I love the show that you're on, and they're talking about Prime Minister's questions. But
that show, that's called, that, ladies and gentlemen, is called Democracy.
But we're going to have a new speaker, the person who presides over everything that is happening in the House of Commons. Burko has like very much splits the room. He is adored by some, but he's not without criticism. And we're going to talk over the people who are putting themselves forward to possibly replace him.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Then finally, did you know the world is ending?
You have mentioned it once or twice.
Yes.
It seems less important than this Brexit business.
We see, like, I heard it from this guy on the tube who was he was pretty adamant actually that we should stop burning fossil fuels and travel around in a more sustainable way. The only trouble is he was so adamant about this that he closed the tube, which to my knowledge is the only green way that people can actually travel around besides horse and cart.
I mean, and even horses fart.
Exactly. To keep it alive.
So you're talking about the protest that they did where a load of Extinction Rebellion protesters shut down a portion of the tube because they were climbing on tube cars.
In fairness, that doesn't narrow it down very much. They already did that with the DLR in Canary Wharf.
There's been an increase, well, not an increase, but there's been a steady kind of like rise of Extinction Rebellion protests. They've set up pretty semi-permanent residency in Leicester Square, which a very lucrative postcode for them to be in.
Do they get squatters' rights?
I actually have no idea. I have been there and I have eaten from their vegan kitchen. And it's good. Yeah, okay. I had a butternut squash curry. Solid, okay. Right. But we are going to chew the fat a little bit over Extinction Rebellion.
That wasn't even deliberate.
You say that now.
But we'll be talking a little bit about them. Right, we're now going to go into a musical interlude. Beg you desperately to give us money on the crowdsourcing platform Patreon, and then come back with Richard. Good. Thank you to everybody who is choosing to support this podcast on Patreon. That is a crowdfunding service where you too can choose to support this podcast and help to keep it going for as little as $1 an episode. Very exciting. It genuinely does really help. There are a surprising number of overheads for running a podcast, but those of you who are already choosing to do so are really making a difference. Thank you. Yeah, that's it. If you want to join, join. That'd be nice. Okay, bye. For once, Jimmy, you don't have to be the sole voice of the 52%.
I feel like I'm just getting into it, to be honest.
You've really enjoyed it, actually. I've seen you lean into that on Twitter quite a lot.
I've been forced to. I've been bullied into it by you.
You have. It took a while. It took 146 episodes. Both of you, kind of like from your understanding, and it's okay if you're not experts on it, from your understanding of the difference between Boris's deal and Theresa May's deal, do you think that this one that he has quote-unquote renegotiated is better or worse? Richard?
It's really hard to say, because when push comes to shove, the only thing that's changed is the section pertaining to Northern Ireland. But forgetting that for one second, I have one theory as to why this seems to be getting a little bit more support besides the whole Irish backstop, front stop, whichever bloody way stop you want to call it.
Just plain stop.
Yes, just plain. That's what you guys have been screaming at us for how long now?
Yeah.
No, the reason I think this seems to be gaining a little bit more support is because it was drafted by a man. And that makes me really sad.
Yeah, I feel like there's some truth in that.
I think that's really, really sad. Because I think what really woke this up to me was, cast your mind back into the abyss when we had a female prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
And she took that, Theresa May took that to Parliament four times, didn't she?
Was it three?
No,
and
it was
then
four.
She wasn't allowed a fourth?
I think Jazza's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Which raises a question as to why this deal actually got a chance in the first place, because if it's that similar.
Because
there is a difference. But right, okay. But she took that deal to Parliament so many times, and the second she said, by the way, if you sign this, I will step down, her sort of the majority in favour of not supporting it dropped from mm-hmm. 180 to 50.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, that smacks of hypocrisy.
Yeah.
The simple fact that the one person who would sign it has absolutely 100% bearing on whether you are going to approve it is wrong.
Yeah,
that is politics, though. And I don't think it suggests sexism. If you think sexism exists, then you can provide other evidence for it, but...
Right, of course, and it would be incredibly difficult to prove, but that's why they're allowed to get away with it.
It's actually an interest... It was so interesting to see Theresa May back this deal.
Mm. Yes.
Because she clearly thinks it's worse. Because this would have been an option for her. Because so one of the things that is substantially different is that it makes a separation between customs arrangements between the between Great Britain and the European Union and Northern Ireland and the European Union substantially different, which is why the Democratic Unionist Party, who are the only Northern Ireland party who take their seats in Westminster, which is why they are so very much against this. She stood up and like backed this deal. And then like there was a load of cooing from the Jacob Rees-Moggs and the Michael Goves and stuff, and saying that hers was the most powerful speech of the night. which I was just like, oh, that just feels like an absolute smack in the face for Theresa May.
Who was it who started speaking and literally every Tory member just walked out? It was somebody from the SNP, I'm sure.
What's his name? Blackford.
No, it wasn't. It was a female. It was a female.
A woman.
We'll look that up. Later.
A woman.
It was. Well, it definitely. Put it this way: if it was Ian Blackford, someone had given a really hard kick.
I think there's been stuff when Theresa May stepped down, her resignation speech talked of compromise. And talked of the importance of compromise. Frankly, she tried to compromise and ended up pissing absolutely fucking everybody off.
Yes.
But initially, she was doing the opposite of compromising, which was trying to crush the saboteurs in the phrase of the Daily Mail.
When she called her election in 2017.
Yeah,
fair.
She was initially very divisive, you know, this is Brexit, this is the way we're going to go with things. She only started properly compromising towards the end.
I feel like that's actually a really interesting perspective of Boris Johnson is actually Theresa May pre-2017.
I will be honest.
In terms of attitude, maybe.
Yeah, I mean...
In terms of trying to just, you know, barrack the opposition.
I would have voted for... I voted for Theresa May for the same reason I think other people voted for Boris Johnson. It's just that I didn't vote because I'm not actually a Tory member.
Mm-hmm.
No, I am a sympathiser, but...
The only Tory member here. Thank you, hello.
I'm not a Tory
member. No, me.
Oh, you! Yes, of course, yes.
I think it either ran out this month or runs out.
I'll check your membership card.
Thank you.
Yeah, well... Law of Attraction and so forth, it is really hard for me to imagine you as a Tory member, so it's probably for the best. But anyway, no, like, I could not have brought myself, even if I was in the position to vote for Boris Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was saying this to you before we started, like, I am, and this says more about what I thought was going to happen than what has actually happened, I am pleasantly surprised by how not as bad it has gone.
With Boris Johnson as PM.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I agree that he shares more in common with Theresa May prior to her losing the election.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the really interesting thing that needs to be asked at this point is if we go for a general election and he gets a majority, it's going to work in exactly the opposite way to Theresa May. So Theresa May was really, really the right amount of confident when she had that 23-seat majority, and she thought, right, let's go for it. Mm-hmm. And then she got absolutely face-palmed by the electorate.
Because she was a terrible campaigner.
Right, exactly. You know, strong and stable, and a lot of silence.
Yeah.
It's like Trump. It is literally the British equivalent of Trump shouting into the abyss, I am a stable genius!
Yeah.
But here and now, what happens if Boris Johnson gets a majority? Because that is going to work in reverse. What happens when he becomes overconfident? And that terrifies me.
I don't know. I feel like he would end up, outside of the scenario that we're in, I think that he'd probably actually have a relatively liberal agenda.
Certainly on social issues.
Yeah, on social issues.
Really?
Some of the economics.
Maybe not immigration. Immigration, he seems to be very happy to wed himself to Priti Patel's.
Yeah.
And maybe not on crime as well.
Yeah. But, like, all of those, that many steps forward completely ends up depending on whether or not a general election happens before or after actual leaving of the European Union.
Yeah, exactly. But if he becomes too confident, I mean, he would be with overconfidence on his back, I think he would be dangerous.
I think he's a pretty overconfident guy generally, don't you?
I've thought that he's come across quite meek recently.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's behind my basis for sort of being so really pleasantly surprised that we haven't yet fallen off the precipice.
Yeah.
Well, his position is pretty weak. In terms of the numbers in the House of Commons.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So,
and also having lost the vote yesterday in Parliament, we were recording this on the Sunday. Yesterday was the first day since the Falklands War that Parliament has sat on a Saturday. People loved it because they called it Super Saturday. Very exciting for everybody involved. Do you think it was necessary for this to... No, it was necessary for it to happen today because he was obliged to send a letter.
Yesterday.
As per an act to get an extension if no deal was agreed.
Which is why he wanted people to vote on this. This was scuppered slightly by something called the Letwin Amendment. Do you want to explain that, Jimmy?
No. Okay, the Letwin Amendment, the basic idea behind it is that the legislation to implement Boris's new withdrawal agreement had to be scrutinised and accepted by the House of Commons before the withdrawal agreement was accepted in principle, which is the opposite way around to how Boris wanted to do it. And it meant that because the deal had not been ratified by the House of Commons or accepted in principle, he had to apply for an extension as per the Bed Act, which we just referenced.
See, I'm hearing words. I'm hearing words, but I'm like, and I think the rest of the country would agree with me when I say, but I do not English speak. Like, it is so
convoluted.
Yeah, and it's getting to that point now where people have no fucking idea. Sorry, are we allowed to swear on this?
Yes,
good.
No, we have an explicit rating on iTunes.
It's good.
It's fine.
Good. You need it. No clue whatsoever.
I think that's been true for a while, though, don't you?
Yeah, but now we're getting to the point where the public doesn't even know what Parliament is voting on. Like, there was a point when he said, the eyes to the right, 322, and I just punched the air, and I was sort of, within about a split second, overjoyed that that meant that the Brexit deal had passed and that finally meant that we were going to get rid of the uncertainty. Because that's what kills businesses, I think, more than anything. Even a no-deal Brexit, like, at least you know this is
how much
money you're going
to
lose.
Yeah, it's the lack of ability to plan, right, which is the big criticism from business.
Exactly, right? So there was one shining moment when I thought, wow, it's passed. And then I realised, actually, no, this was the Letwin agreement. And then it's sort of this emotional...
So the Letwin agreement requires an extension in order for there to be that increased scrutiny. And so there are a couple of interesting things.
But ultimately, it doesn't actually mean that Brexit isn't going to
No,
happen.
Not at all.
And that's another thing.
So theory.
Yeah.
Well, Oliver Letwin said that he actually backed...
The deal.
But he wants to make sure that the whole of the deal actually has legitimacy.
Yes.
Rather than it being hodgepodgely put together, and then perhaps not having the water tightness that it needs. Such an important piece of legislation, right? That argument to me makes sense. It also makes sense that it comes from somebody like Oliver Letwin, who says that he backs leaving the European Union, and he backs the this particular bill and wants to vote for it. It wouldn't have been able to necessarily come from anybody on the Labour benches or the Lib Dems, for example.
Well, I think that the trouble is it is legitimate to scrutinise something like this, but my sense is that it's being championed, the delay is being championed overwhelmingly by Remainer MPs who don't want us to leave. So there's a sense of ulterior motive.
But it was interesting. I was listening to the Romaniacs podcast, who make me feel like a moderate.
That's sort of in the title, though.
And they were looking around themselves and seeing the bedfellows that they had, and were like, "Oh, we've got some pretty weird alliances happening here, like Momentum, like Scottish Nationalists." Who are all people who, for the London metropolitan liberal elite, are not people that you would usually necessarily be aligned with.
So the Romaniacs are the London metropolitan liberal elite.
Yeah, very much so.
No offence.
Wasn't it Richard Branson who previously went on the record and was like, "Yay, vote Remain, it'll help my pocket."
Yeah, props.
Are you counting him in sort of that?
No, yeah, probably.
I'll be honest, I haven't exposed myself quite as much as you to the Romaniac media. I more sort of talk to people in the office. I get enough Remain agenda from people. Not saying that that's like we're all entitled to opinions, as you two know very well. But
that's very kind. You know, how generous of you.
I know, isn't it just? You think we didn't live in a democracy. Oh, sorry, did I just say that? But no, like. There are so many ulterior motives, and I think that's why we don't agree on anything. Like this country cannot agree. Like when you have two people voting for the same thing because it provides two completely different outcomes that are mutually exclusive, then you have a problem. Then you have a huge problem. And the Letwin agreement. Why do I keep saying it? It's an amendment. Basically allows for the Remainers to delay Brexit and simultaneously for those moderate Brexiteers to have scrutiny on the bill to make sure that it's going to be okay.
So, but then I think that it can... the reason that the extension is such a big deal is because Boris Johnson said that he'd rather die in a ditch.
The extension allows time for a second referendum to be organised.
Possibly, yeah.
Not that that will necessarily.
I don't think there are the numbers for that. Obviously, that I've made it very clear that that's all I want. All I want for Christmas is a people's vote.
We already have one, Jazza. You lost it. I don't know if you remember.
I would like another one in very clear terms, Jimmy. I will not go through this with you again.
I'm going to step in here and put my foot down.
What,
for both of you. Okay? Because at the end of the day, the reason why people want a people's vote is
You may hear
the Nazgul has arrived! The reasons why we want a people's vote are because Parliament was not able to adequately portray to either side why people should vote either yes or no, correct?
Because of the fact that there was nothing concrete that was voted for in the initial vote.
Exactly.
That's how I
referendums are not technically legally binding. And you don't want a people's vote because there is a sort of a official mandate that referendum was the referendum. You had your say, now shut up.
Jimmy doesn't want there to be a second one because the decision of the first referendum hasn't been played out yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is what Theresa May said in Parliament yesterday.
Okay.
And it made me think of you.
Okay.
She's a very wise woman, obviously.
But two things have to be really set in stone from this point forward. We have to learn from these mistakes, or we do not advance as a nation.
Well, what are the mistakes you're referring
having
to?
Having referendum?
No.
Having any vote?
No, I'm not referring to those. Yeah. I'm not referring to that. No. Shush. Hear me out. There are two very large mistakes. First and foremost, I think people have a duty to demand more from Parliament in terms of information.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that people should not vote unless they know truly what it is that they're voting for, or at least for those who are not really sort of that educated in politics, they know enough of what they're voting for and they've seen both sides of the argument. But also, whose fault is this? It's not the people's fault. It is Parliament's fault. So Parliament should also be held to account for not putting out that information. And for that reason alone, I think they should be forced to implement the result of that referendum on the basis that they were the ones that didn't put out the information correctly in the first place. Like, it is six of one and half a dozen of the other. And when we were watching that TV... we weren't watching it together, but I was watching it sort of solo, and I was sat on my sofa, sort of vaguely understanding for the first time ever that the disconnect works both ways. You know, we as people can look at our parliamentary TV and scream at it and shake fists and go, "You don't understand us."
Mm-hmm.
But that is a feeling of sort of disconnect from us to them. We don't feel like our voice is being heard.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, I actually don't think that Parliament realises that there is a disconnect at all. And I think that's an even larger... That's like the disconnect.
Would you say that manifests with like people saying the will of the people is this?
Yes.
Or people have... Oh, like the People's Vote March, that... I mean, very rightly, polling shows that we would vote to remain by... Still single digits.
Yeah, but... it has been that way for a while as well.
And the graph is continuing to
expand,
in favour of Remain too. And especially so, for example, Caroline Lucas, the leader of the Greens and their only MP, talks about this a lot, the fact that the nation has changed its mind now, and that should be something that is.
But I mean, it's almost like saying, you know, if a Tory government was elected with a majority, governments become increasingly unpopular over the course of their, you know, tenure, generally speaking.
Yeah. And then you get to vote them out.
You do, but you do get a period where you have that government, even though if the polling might show at any given time that most people would vote to remove them, the government doesn't just drop, just because the polling shows that.
Yeah, I understand that.
But like I said, Parliament should be accountable for not informing the people.
Where is the biggest disconnect of what information needed to be expressed by the Parliament?
Oh God, you want the list?
I want the top one.
The top one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really hard one, because I think it's a toss-up between what this is going to mean for individual families in the country and why we should care that it could potentially seriously damage business on the Remain side.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Leave side, I think it should also be, rather than sort of putting out stupid statements like £350 a week, £350 million.
It would have been less convincing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. We'll give you a free penny suite when you walk in the door. £350 million a week for the NHS. That's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
What they should have implied was... the benefits that this could have for us. And if they don't have any, just be upfront and honest, because there's no... And then it would all come out in the wash.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, the side that has the least convincing information, no one's going to vote for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I disagree with you completely on this line of thinking. There was plenty of information available if you wanted to go and look for it.
Look, we live in it. We live
people,
in it.
But people were able to project whatever the fuck they wanted onto Leave.
Correct. Exactly.
Yes. I would agree with those criticisms of the Leave campaign. I'm just saying that there was information available. It wasn't Parliament's fault. You can debate about the quality of the information, the sources. That's always going to be the case. That is how elections work.
Well, I stand proudly as a Leaver who voted to leave, but not for any reason of immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm extremely
proud. Jimmy as well, right?
Yeah.
Right, of course. Because...
I still think it's right that nations should be able to control immigration.
I threw you a nice thing, Jimmy. Let's stay stick to that. Okay.
But also, herein... we have a scenario where Remainers are not going to go and look actively for stories that promote the Leave cause. neither the other way around. So that's where the bias comes from. The fact the government put out such stereotypical views from day one, that actually that created the discord that we're seeing now, because Remainers think that Leavers, you know, might possibly believe in serious immigration curbing and, you know, are all inherently racist, when we know that's not the case at all.
Mm-hmm. Only Jimmy.
Be nice. and Leavers, I'm not a typical Leaver. I actually did go and read up on both sides. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know what Leavers... What do you think about Remainers if you're sort of doing your stereotypical...
Metropolitan elitists, you know, eat vegan cheese, I guess, and think that we should...
Hey, that is unfair. We gave me vegan cheese yesterday. I had no choice in the matter.
Open the borders to Syria and Turkey and Russia and, you know, all the rest
Can
of
I
the
just
countries.
Say at this point we don't have a border with Syria, and I don't think we're going to unless the world gets
open the borders was a broader phrase, but yeah.
But
yeah, people who hate Englishness and who generally dislike British
but
culture.
Who put that view out there? The government and the government campaigns. And I,
no, the government. This was David Cameron's pro-Remain government,
right?
But this was the problem, because they, especially the Conservative Party, had used the distrust of the European Union as a crutch to appease their own members for such a long time, that then when David Cameron's government turned around and said, by the way, vote to Remain, it didn't work. People were like, we call bullshit.
But the whole, everybody, Leavers and Remainers, can all agree on one thing, and that's that the information supplied by both sides of the campaign was shocking. And
I don't agree with that.
For that...
Well, but that's not where the terms of the debate were. Like, the information was there. Like, Richard was able to find it. But
I just think you're asking for an impossible thing, which is for people to be, you know, well-informed when they come in for elections. What is the definition of well-informed?
We live in the age of the internet. We have two major social media networks and a third laggard, which is LinkedIn. FYI, I freaking love LinkedIn.
TikTok.
No, but you've and Google Plus is just sort of crouching in the corner.
No, it's dead. Google Plus. Dead now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it got
so it's been air powered.
Mm-hmm.
Great. No, but the whole idea is we live in the information age, and yet nobody has any information. Like, what is this shit? So, I firmly believe that some bigwigs at Parliament, let this result be implemented, and then someone at Parliament should sit down and say, all right, if this is really going to be bad for our country, we, regardless of whether it's going to be bad or good for the country, we need to learn from these mistakes. We need to find a way that if such and such a person comes up with an idea that they want a referendum on, we are completely transparent, and we have to be transparent in law with the people of this country so that the same thing does not happen again. Because can you imagine if somebody puts a petition to the government now and they say, right, this is something we want to work on, and it's, let's say it's got 50 million signatures, it crashes Parliament website and what have you, and people go,
the whole population of the UK.
Yeah, exactly, right? So everybody goes on this thing and they go, right, so we'll have a referendum. How do we put a referendum, which now has a tarnished reputation forever unless something happens, how do we actually go and democratically ask the people what they want unless the correct information is provided in the information age?
Yeah, well, that's the Electoral Commission's job to make sure that... So, for example, they were the reason that it ended up being... Leave and Remain on the ballot paper rather than yes or no. Because of the connotations and the psychological connotations that are linked to that. Just wrapping up this topic, what do you think happens next? Jimmy, are you convinced of my dream coming true?
What, of us remaining?
No, of us having... Frankly, right now, I don't really care. I just want there to be another referendum.
Oh, God.
For the thrill, you know.
For shits and giggles.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure, because it still seems... I mean, I know Dominic Raab, the Foreign Secretary, earlier today said that they had the numbers to get the withdrawal agreement legislation through. But, you know, Boris Johnson's administration has talked a lot and it hasn't always come up with the goods, I think it's fair to say. But so I'm not, I think it's still very tight, so I'm not sure he's going to be able to pass his deal, but he might be able to. If he passes his deal...
And that will happen in the next couple of days as well. They plan on doing it.
If he passes the deal, I imagine it will still involve an extension of some sort, but if he's got the numbers in the House of Commons, I think we will actually leave on the terms that he's negotiated, basically.
I've just thought of something.
If not, who knows?
Let's say, theoretically, Boris Johnson does cave. And this is very theoretical. It's almost academic at this point.
Cave to who?
Caves to the people who want a second referendum.
Oh, and goes, like, you know
what?
Yeah,
he perked up very quickly. He perked up very quickly.
No, yeah, I understand.
Right, okay. So, yeah, let's say he caves. What is to stop him from saying... it's my deal or no deal.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get all the people who wanted a second vote boycotting the vote. The only people who are actually going to vote in the first place are the people who want that deal and the people who want no deal.
Well, this is actually the only reason that Jimmy would want a second referendum.
It would be funny, wouldn't it? All these Remainers over the last 2 years would be like, another vote, another vote.
Yeah,
and Boris Johnson turns around and goes, okay, here's the vote.
I'll be honest, I would be happier with that than with this just going through.
So would I, and I would adamantly vote for his deal. But only because I've been shaking my fist...
I've used my ballot as toilet paper.
You should just walk out of the polling station.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, that's how I'd feel.
No, but...
my feelings are valid, Richard.
That really, really brings a new meaning to spoiling the ballot.
Does that. Soiling the ballot.
Yeah, it was a typo. Yes, it should have said spoiling, not soiling.
Speaking of ballots,
I'm amongst animals.
Yeah, we should
discuss another election that is taking place.
Yeah, so there is a relatively crowded field, I feel, for the next Speaker of the House as John Bercow. Oh God, as John Bercow.
I would love to see Boris Johnson as Speaker of the House, though. Let's be honest, that would be
disastrous.
Comedy gold
it
to
would,
watch the
it would
House.
Be like, have I got news for you again? So there are 9 individuals running, pulled from the 2 main parties. So they are there's lots of sirs and dames.
I know, isn't this like, this is actually more elitist than the elitist competition becoming prime minister?
Surprise, surprise. So I'll run really quickly through them and then we'll kind of like pick out our highlights. So Henry Bellingham.
Is he, who's the deputy speaker at the moment?
Dame Eleanor Lang is, and Lindsay Hoyle.
There's several deputies, aren't there?
Yeah, there's 3, right?
I mean, guy from up north, proper up north.
Lindsay Hoyle from Chorley.
Aye.
Yeah, I quite like him, he's pretty cool. So there are Sir Henry Bellingham, Chris Bryant, who's the Labour MP from Wales, who's very famous for having pictures of himself in his Speedos leaked when he was on a gay dating website. Harriet Harman.
Who totally forgotten about
that. Oh, isn't that wonderful, though? You know what? I'd like that if our first gay speaker was one who we'd all seen in the buff. Harriet Harman, who is Mother of the House and is currently probably the favourite to win.
I don't know. I don't follow the numbers.
Meg Hillier, who is the youngest in the field and Labour MP for Hackney South. Sir Lindsay Hoyle, who's Richard's favourite from up to north.
He's proper in Northern.
Dame Eleanor Lang, who's kind of like a thinking man's Andrea Leadsom.
Damn it, with fake praise.
Well, I'm guessing I know who you don't want to get.
Sir Edward Lee, who's a Tory from Gainsborough.
Isn't he the one who started to become a barrister? Or a solicitor?
Oh, I don't know.
The law. There was one of them who, because I watched the Speaker's hustings, and there was one of them, for goodness sake, I was barely out of bed at this point. And they were talking about the unfairness of Parliament interns not getting paid, which, can I please just... draw attention to the fact that I had an internship at a financial institution to which I now gladly say that I am an employee. And they paid me 20 grand a year to do that job for 10 weeks, right? And Parliament has been forcing through to everybody's completely honestly, I freaking love that this is the way that it's going. Mm-hmm. Paid internships must be compulsory, and yet Parliament don't pay their own mm-hmm. sodding mm-hmm. interns
because they count as volunteers. Disgusting. There are actually still two more. So Shailesh Varma,
sorry,
who is the Conservative from Cambridge, and Dame Rosie Winterton, who is from Labour. Bloody hell. So what is so interesting? So there's a really good hour-long hustings of all of the candidates on the BBC. And it's so interesting hearing them talk about just like, it's basically HR. And they talk about improving working conditions for members of parliament. One of the big things that they're talking about is tackling bullying.
John Burko was accused of bullying.
He's
a bullying arsehole.
To be fair, wouldn't most bullies also deny that they are bullying arseholes? You'd expect.
It would be surprising if he was like, yes, he just owned it. It's like, yeah, that's why I'm good at my job, because, you know, I bully people.
Yeah, exactly. But those kind of policies around, it's not even policies, it's loopholes that they are able to exploit about having kids on like 6 weeks work experience, which isn't technically an internship, coming in and working for free or just having their expenses paid. Yep. It's so normal. But then also on the MP side of things, and I didn't really realise until Meg Hillier, one of the candidates, and started talking about it, was how little they have in terms of training of like even running an office. Or finding jobs after they unexpectedly lose their seat after a snap election, for example. And it was so interesting. Oh, frankly, I was just happy for there to be some kind of like a political commentary about something other than Brexit. But to see kind of like concern for the well-being of parliamentarians.
Yeah.
And in a way that we don't really get to see very much.
And this debate actually went right to the heart of the issue of sort of how middle class centric politics has become, because again, going back to this that you mentioned and I sort of prematurely mentioned earlier, I honestly thought you got to the end of the list.
I realised that, and I was like, no, there's two more.
Many people. At the end of the day, how on earth do you expect there to be a well represented House of Parliament when the only people that can intern for positions in that House of Parliament are people who have wealthy relatives in London, or, you know, even semi-wealthy relatives in London,
right, yeah.
who actually, you know, you can either stay with or can afford to just go to work for free for X number of months, mm-hmm. completely unpaid. Like, there is a place for unpaid internships, but it's not in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's okay if other countries do it.
Are you talking about slavery?
No. I was merely sort of being a little sarcastic about the fact that some other countries might be sort of, shall we say, a little bit more lax about mm-hmm. employment rights and so forth. This country should set itself far above that and should say, okay, especially the government, because the government, the idea of this is they're supposed to be an exemplary organisation to us all.
Mm-hmm.
And they really are not being, because the only people that can afford to actually go to those internships are people who have so much money they can just be like, yay, I'm just going to work unpaid. Like, I am from a privileged background. I would not be able to afford to go to one of those internships. You're honestly suggesting that I'm supposed to rent somewhere in London for 4 months with no pay on your bike?
Yeah. And when you kind of realise, because I have friends who worked in fashion and have been in internships for years, because that's how...
Because it's cheap labour.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And passionate, young, vibrant labour that doesn't worry about the fact that it doesn't get paid. But people were being supported by their parents for like years because they were getting next to nothing. They were getting barely like a daily stipend.
Right.
And it just completely, the people that you're going to end up seeing around you are not going to be representative of the people who are actually, who are meant to be represented in Parliament, not only from the benches that are in the House of Commons, but also the people who are surrounding them in their places of work and who are helping them to make decisions, who are helping them draft legislation, who are writing their speeches and all of those kinds of things, right? Mm. What do you think about this approach of like, HR to stop bullying. Do you think there's actually any meat in that at all, Jimmy?
So I think the one of the problems with Burko is that he was simultaneously accused of being like a main instigator of bullying culture, and it was also his responsibility to deal with other accusations of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, correct me, for the Speaker of the House of Commons is, as you say, they did chat about HR stuff mm-hmm. in their hustings. So is he effectively the head of HR?
Or decides how those kinds of I think technically no, because it is the people of the United Kingdom who are in charge of HR technically.
I mean, it seems weird to combine. I mean, we could talk a little bit more about this. The role of being a referee for parliamentary mm-hmm. debate, which is the main thing that people see as far as the speaker mm-hmm. goes in Prime Minister's questions and whatnot, with also all that other stuff to do with like running. Running the HR function or just running the House of Commons and Parliament in a general sense.
There was, in the hustings that they have on the Beeb, and if you have a spare hour, I definitely would recommend watching it, there was actually very little direct criticism of the way that Burko does his job by being a champion of the backbenchers and stuff like that. It tended to be more around his...
style of criticism.
Yeah, right.
He has very long-winded ways of telling people to shut up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, he does, and I think he does it, if I'm honest, for the public attention, because you can even tell.
Oh yeah, he's a show-off. Of course, yeah, yes,
he is. He wants to say what could be said in two syllables in 57,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite clear, even when he's telling off people for legitimate reasons, by the way. He's very clear that we are being, or they are being rather, publicly scrutinised by the public.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And whilst his attitude to the parliamentarians is in a way correct, because you've got people who are standing up and shouting and all this, the Prime Minister mm-hmm. must be heard. You have as well a little bit of overkill.
Mm-hmm.
Insofar as he does that for the Prime Minister, he does that for the Leader of the Opposition. And then he also castigates people for things that they might not have control over. It's like, I notice, who is it he said? Notice the Honourable Gentleman over there shaking his head somewhat eccentrically. I shall assure him that he will be heard. Mr. Jeremy Corbyn! And,
pretty good impression.
I know.
Especially the Corbyn.
I know,
very
right?
Very good.
And it is demeaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think whilst... I love this line from Albus Dumbledore. He says, indifference and neglect can often invoke more pain than outright dislike.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that is very true. As someone who has experienced a lot of indifference, and we'll get onto that another show. But like, we need to accept that he has, on public television,
mm-hmm.
niggled at colleagues for traits that they might not have control over
mm-hmm.
and have basically publicly shamed.
Or their looks, or brought in like their kids, like he was criticised
yes.
for... quite nonchalantly kind of bringing up a parents' evening because Burko's children go to the same school as Michael Gove's children.
I mean, if any of us had a colleague that behaved like Burko behaves in those sessions where he's basically abusing people,
mm-hmm.
He would be sacked.
Do you think that... So what's interesting about this changing of the role of Speaker is that it's going to be this Parliament that chooses him. And we know that this Parliament...
You mean the MPs that are currently elected?
Yeah.
In 3 years, mm-hmm. Parliament will be completely unrecognisable. That's my...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is, it's one of the reasons that he has stepped down so abruptly,
yeah.
actually.
So he finishes his job on the 31st.
On the 31st, yeah. Happy Halloween. Do you think that...
You just put a pumpkin in the speaker's chair.
Yeah,
please, God, that would be absolutely brilliant.
Is a different speaker going to be, especially as they're probably still, or they may still have to deal with some Brexit stuff, do you think that a different speaker is going to significantly change the kind of stuff that comes out of the House of Commons?
if they're stylistically very different, mm-hmm. Which I think someone like Harriet Harman would be.
What do you think Harriet's going to be like?
Probably, I quite like Harriet.
Probably just nicer than Burko, which maybe is a bit stereotypical, given that she's a woman and he's a man. Mm-hmm. But you'd sort of, she just seems like she'd be less of a prick towards people, wouldn't tell them off in a very long... I know this long-winded this thing keeps coming up, but it is quite disruptive. Mm-hmm. If your job is to actually... get the business of Parliament moving through an orderly way, which is part of his job. He's not very good at that aspect mm-hmm. of it, mm-hmm. I don't think.
There is one factor, though, that sort of tears me in half, really, because I want to see her elected as Speaker for this very reason as well.
Harriet Harman?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's quite simple. She would be a real force to be reckoned with, and I think she's currently sort of a sheep in wool's clothing.
Wolf in sheep's clothing.
I remember when she was interim leader while Labour was finding a new leader before Ed Miliband took the post.
Why they didn't...
She was pretty bloody brilliant, actually. On the dispatch box, she's...
That is also why I want her to be elected, so she's not available for Labour.
And she's also kind of like more of an old Labour, like a new Labour-y person, despite the fact that she goes back a lot further than the new Labour years. She is the mother of the house as well. She is well respected.
I should say I'm still pretty... I mean, I'm sceptical about how they choose speakers anyway, but drawing it from the ranks... of MPs, I think, is not desirable anyway.
Doesn't make sense.
Partly because it disenfranchises the constituents of wherever they are, because they can no longer vote for most mainstream parties because they don't stand candidates against them, generally speaking.
Harriet Harman's only the MP for Peckham, so
just a minor constituency.
Do we have any listeners in Peckham? We don't know.
We have at least one.
Wow.
If it gets brought up.
But also, that's hilarious. She's got a lot of baggage. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm right in saying that Lindsay Hoyle is one of the few MPs who hasn't revealed which way he voted in the referendum.
Interesting.
Which is a plus, for sure. I mean, my ideal is that actually they pick speakers from outside of political parties, somebody that doesn't have a lot of baggage, independent committee.
You can do it, Jim.
Jimmy would actually be... You're the kind of person that they would probably want.
That's probably why he said it.
Yeah.
I am available. I do have a podcast that needs to run it. It's frankly more important than...
We could just shove the mic in the middle of Commons and have it there.
What do you think about restricting the amount of time that somebody can be Speaker? So Burko was Speaker for... Over 10 years.
He said he would stand down after 10 years and then stayed on because he wanted to chaperone Brexit through in as much as he was able to do so.
What do you think about restricting the amount of time and having it something that rotates a lot more frequently?
That's probably a lot to be said for that, I think.
You're welcome. You can have that for free, Parliament.
Because at the moment, it is, as Burko has demonstrated, for good or bad, it is very heavily dependent on the personality of whoever sits in the role, whereas if you rotate it more, it is less dependent on that, and it's probably more dependent on processes and things that are agreed a bit more consensually.
Well, drawing on that, why does the Prime Minister need to get re-elected every 5 years and the Speaker doesn't? Because at the end of the day, the Speaker actually has overriding power over the Prime Minister in quite an alarmingly large number of areas.
Well, some Republicans think that the Speaker should be...
The Queen.
But the Head of State. They would be voted for. They don't actually have very much power, but they preside over Parliament and are in charge of kind of like its processes. But then I would worry about the politicisation.
Yeah, I don't... If you want it to be a role to be non-political, you should not... allow people to vote for it.
Correct.
I think that's fairly straightforward.
And for the record, I do know what Republicans are.
Yeah!
That was definitely a... I was looking at the issue from backwards instead of forwards. Hashtag backstop, front stop.
Shall we move on quickly to Extinction Rebellion?
Well, before you do that, though, I think the one last thing I do want to raise a point at is... And we haven't actually really sort of focused on this because 10 years ago, diversity wasn't in the news anywhere near as much as it is now, because I think sort of people think they've woken up over the last 10 years for whatever sleepy dream they were in. We've now got on the hustings one woman, one gay man. We have, I think, you said there was a gay man on there, right?
Chris Bryan. There's actually four women.
Oh, is there four women?
Four women and five men.
So Harriet Harman, Meg Hillier, Eleanor Lang, who is one of the current deputy speakers, and Dame Rosie Winterton.
And we've got one. I can't remember the technical term for it.
Person of colour?
Yes, person of colour. Mm-hmm.
In Shaila Shavara, yeah.
Sorry?
Shaila Shavara.
And we've got people from the north.
Mm-hmm. We've had one woman in the speaker's chair before.
That's
right?
Betty Boothroyd.
Yeah.
But is this not, I would go so far as to say, the most diverse speaker's hustings we've had in a very long time?
I don't know. I don't even remember the last speaker's hustings, to be honest. I think, like, broadly, I very vaguely remember when Burko was first elected. But I don't remember who he ran against, actually. But this is... Like, it still has... There are still a majority of white men. It's not a majority, actually. It is a pretty balanced...
They're all pretty old.
Mm-hmm. They're all pretty old. Meg Hillier is quite young.
How young is she?
I think she's in her 40s.
They're all pretty old.
Well, it's nice to see that at long last we've got an election going on where we have a really diverse ballot. Mm-hmm. As somebody who takes diversity and inclusion very, very seriously, being disabled myself and having a lot of black and ethnic minority friends who have come from both disadvantaged and very, very privileged backgrounds. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really quite refreshing to see because the face of Parliament is still the old firm. And that was the first time I think I can put my hand on my heart and say I've seen evidence that there is diversity in Parliament.
Mm-hmm. So... I just looked at the 2009 race. Margaret Beckett ran.
As did Anne Widdicombe.
As did Anne fucking Widdicombe. Can you imagine Anne Widdicombe as the Speaker of the House?
Well, you talk about minorities, religious minority right there.
Total
crank.
Okay, cool. We went the same thing.
But what other black ethnic minority?
There was one. No, actually, it was six white people then.
Six white people, and that's it.
Yeah, six white people, two women.
Case fucking rests.
Yeah,
that is a huge step forward in 10 years.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And you know, more power, more power to them. I just want to see somebody blind do it, or deaf. And that'd be hilarious, a deaf speaker.
A deaf speaker would have been great. What was the name of the Labour cabinet minister who was blind, who has his dog in the chamber?
David Blunkett. Don't even get me started. He missed so many opportunities to actually do good for us.
He was Home Secretary, wasn't he?
He was for a period.
Yeah.
And then he got caught for shagging his secretary.
Yeah, you know. To all of the inappropriate jokes that I remember seeing in the mid-noughties. Shall we talk about, very quickly, because I know we're running out of time, but Extinction Rebellion.
We're all going to die!
I think that they are broadly a positive movement because they are moving and expanding the Overton window and making it more acceptable for people to have more environmentally friendly policies, ideas, without being kind of like seen as like a crazy hippie. Now it is Extinction Rebellion that are the crazy ones, and if you choose to go vegan, that's seen as like a normal thing.
Is that them though, or is that just them slotting into a trend that was already well on its way anyway?
I think so to a point, but whilst I agree wholeheartedly with the movement,
Do you agree wholeheartedly with that? It's pretty anti-capitalist.
No. I agree with the concepts for which they are fighting in terms of the climate scenario. I could not agree more about that.
I think their environmental strategy is totally, as far as I can make out, is very intertwined with their broader political views about economics and that sort of thing. Because they want, I mean, they're a kind of anti-growth party in economic terms. Mm-hmm. Because they want extreme measures to take place.
See, this is where I, as a normal person, haven't had the full story from the
normal person. Sorry.
Thanks, Jazza.
I mean, you've appeared on the podcast now, so
you're part of the liberal metropolitan media elite now. Sorry, mate.
Well, it doesn't stop me from criticising. But in all fairness, like, I haven't got the full story on Extinction Rebellion. All I know is there's this bloke who tried to stop the entire London Underground in one day, and you know,
you know that because that affected you, right? Because you were a commuter.
Exactly. But I personally am all for cutting back on carbon emissions. Mm-hmm. There used to be a time when I would aspire to things like private jets and supercars and all sorts. And I just think, well, yeah, let's pull the brakes on that, because why would I? Mm-hmm. It's very damaging to the environment. It's very, very selfish in a way. And I'm, for want of a better foot on the record here, I'm not against people owning supercars and luxury cars and private jets and all that sort of thing. I am, you know, a blue-blooded capitalist, and I'm always going to be that way. But I agree with the idea that people should, if not ditch the things that they love to save the environment, at least try and figure out a solution that we can still have those in an environmentally friendly way.
But that is part of the thing that, not just Extinction Rebellion, because I don't think they're necessarily representative of the wider movement of people who are climate conscious, but they do want us to stop flying, to be able to change our lifestyles in a way that so many people, most people, are just not going to be willing to do.
Correct.
People aren't going to be willing to give up their holidays once a year.
No.
People aren't going to be willing to have to give up the autonomy of having their own vehicle, for example. And those are all things that are, with the timeframes that are put up for by Extinction Rebellion and those and people who are leaders within those spaces, they very deliberately don't have any single leader, because they're a very just disjointed movement. Mm-hmm. But they, what they, in order to kind of like reduce the effects of carbon in the atmosphere, we need to have acted and change our behaviours yesterday. And frankly, that isn't going to happen in a world where our dependence on fossil fuels is so entrenched.
Yeah.
And so for me, like I've said this on the podcast before, I think that our resources need to be put into mitigation rather than prevention now.
Absolutely, because we can all agree to save the planet, but nobody, you are spot on, nobody's going to change their lifestyles.
I think that's sort of untrue. I
mean, you're a flexitarian now, aren't you?
Well, I have cut back on meat, and one of the benefits of that is that you reduce your environmental impact. Mm-hmm.
You also get more veg. It's a magical thing on veg.
Also that, in theory. But, you know, people recycling like jam jars and that sort of thing, it's not that people aren't doing anything to change their lifestyles.
But it's the but it's the structure that needs to change.
Well, the car thing,
so that it's easier for people to make those personal.
Yeah, so for some people, giving up a car means that they can't get to work, which means they can't live. So telling them not to use a car is totally impractical and bonkers.
But as well, I think it's the same level of disconnect that you see. They're exacerbating a class warfare. And I took that line
from Extinction Rebellion?
Yeah, I think so. I really think they are, because there is a total disconnect. In the same way as there's a disconnect between the poor and the rich, there's no empathy there. And there's no empathy between the people who actually know how to cut back on their lifestyles and those who don't. And
It can cost more to be environmentally friendly.
Correct.
Yeah. So
the other thing as well is, why are they doing it the way they're doing it? I can completely understand shutting down an airport in a protest. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Why the tube? It did make it look very fun sitting on the front of a plane. It did make me want to do that instantly. But yeah,
Can I just say, the guy who did that was blind. And more power.
All of a sudden, the wind starts rushing past his face, and I'm like, wait, what's happening?
No.
Holy shit. They didn't notice
you,
me.
You went there. But, I understand that, but why the tube? Like, there is.
Because it grabs people's attention.
Yeah, it's disruptive.
It forced me into taking a car. Mm-hmm. And I actually had a word a couple of days prior to somebody who was a member of Extinction Rebellion outside that exit on just after Bishopsgate, Bank Station.
Mm-hmm.
You know where I am, you're walking towards the Ned. And I was talking to this person and I sort of left the conversation thinking, well, actually, they do kind of have a point. I don't think they were sort of wholeheartedly of open about all of their opinions, because if you stand in that part of London, everyone is a capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I was like, well, that really does sort of ring true. We do need to have some kind of systemic change. And then they totally destroyed any sympathy I had by stopping me from using the only environmentally friendly way of me getting to work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that really wrangles feathers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're going to stop people... if you're going to protest, at least think of the consequences of your actions when you protest, and just make sure that those consequences don't conflict with what you're protesting about. The glue they used must be in plastic packaging.
Mm-hmm.
You mean to stick themselves to the DLR?
Yeah.
Some of them did.
Their tents are as well.
Right,
I see, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the glue they use itself is not environmentally friendly.
But also, I'm really wary of, them going in and nitpicking and... being a bit Julia Hartley Brewer and noticing a single-use plastic bottle in the background of a photo that Greta Thunberg is in. I think that that's...
That's totally stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid and distracting and doesn't actually fucking matter. But that's why I think the most useful thing that they're doing is they're making people who choose to be vegan, for example, seem more reasonable, because it wasn't that long ago. No, it wasn't that long ago... that you
I'm laughing at the campaign that you've outlined, which is to behave in a totally bonkers way,
mm-hmm.
in order to make
work for Farage.
I think
it's in the process of working.
In some ways,
it's in the process of working. Yes, in the same way as my car holding the starter ignition on for about 15 minutes, it's in the process of starting.
Yeah,
it's not actually going to work.
But I'm just very sceptical about. I mean, they have caught a lot of attention, so in that sense, it's been a very successful campaign.
And they have a great logo.
They seem kind of averse to the whole idea of proper democratic engagement. They have this idea of citizens' assemblies, which we sort of have in the form of a parliament, albeit it's not working very well at the moment. But they just don't seem to have grasped that politics is about trade-offs. And, you know, this sort of links back to the thing we're saying about car usage and whatnot, is that, you know, there has to be a process. You can't just force environmentalism down people's throats.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't seem to have grasped that fully, I don't think.
Yeah. Guys, we're at an hour, so we're going to have to wrap up. And we could speak a lot more, and I'm sure we'll come back to Extinction Rebellion at some point.
Okay.
Maybe with somebody glued to our
table
or something. That'd be really fun. Richard, if people want to find out more about you or find you, is there anywhere that they can go?
Nobody can find me.
Excellent.
No. I am on Facebook, but I don't really have much of a digital presence at the moment, to the point where I've actually forgotten my Twitter handle. I think it's at Richard Hyman 1994.
We'll link to that in the description.
We'll link to it in the description. See, I'm a proper old fogey who has a true disconnect from technology, unless it suits me to not do that.
I am Jazza John on all social platforms, including now TikTok. Jimmy, where can they find you?
I'm at JD Nichols, only on Twitter.
He's actually quite good at Twitter recently. thank you very much for listening. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.